the game that Amazon is playing is they're a very profitable company, but they have just continually taken that excess proceeds, that free cash flow, and invested it to A, scale the things that are working, and B, to be trying a number of new experiments in order to build the next new big business.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. It's Todd Bishop here, and our guest this week in the GeekWire studio is John Rossman. He is the author of the new book, Think Like Amazon, 50 and a half ideas to become a digital leader. And we'll have to maybe just keep the half a mystery for people who get to the end.
That's right. We're going to tease it out.
John, how many years were you at the company?
So I was at Amazon for just about 4 years, and I got to help launch and scale the marketplace business. And then I also ran the enterprise services business, where we ran other large merchants' e-commerce business. So Target.com, Toys R Us, Marks & Spencer, and a number of other great brands.
Well, it's fascinating in part because that business, which you were hired to launch effectively, the marketplace business, that's now responsible for more than 50% of the units sold on Amazon.com.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see Jeff's shareholder letter. And A, that's the very first thing that he points out, is up to 58%, which is a stunning number. But then really how he spun it as really calling out the Amazon retail team as, to quote, third-party sellers are kicking our first-party butt. I think that's a really interesting call out.
That's fascinating that you read it that way, because I read it in a different way. I read it as him putting out an antidote to future antitrust regulation. Maybe it was dual purpose.
I think it is a dual purpose there and everything, right?
Describe your book, Think Like Amazon, because I've been reading it, and the way that I've been digesting it is I've been picking chapters that I think might resonate with me, almost like I read a Harvard Business Review compilation.
Yeah.
What are you hoping that people will take away from it?
Right. So I was at Amazon. It was a long time ago, right? Early 2002 through late 2005. But how Amazon goes about getting the types of results they get today, they go about it in exactly the same way. And I'm always testing these ideas and approaches with my Amazon friends and everything. And so I left Amazon a long time ago. I get to work with leaders. I do a lot of keynotes. I get asked a lot of questions. And so the book is really a compilation of all the different types of questions I've got asked about, well, how would Jeff think about this? How does Amazon do that? How should I think about my digital strategy operations? What needs to change? And so I tried to break them into bite-sized pieces of actionable insight that are authentic Amazon strategies or mindsets or mechanisms in how they get their work done today.
As you look at the book and you look at these 50 and a half ideas, which are the ideas that most define Amazon in your mind? And are there any that might surprise people who just sort of have a passing knowledge of the company and might order products from them?
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of over-indexed the story on kind of customer obsession. So that aside and everything, I think the idea 22 that's called relentless.com, next generation operational excellence, and idea 31, lies, damn lies, and metrics are really what define. If you ask somebody that works at Amazon, like, what is it like? It's about metrics and accountability for trying to get to operational perfection in things that matter to customers and things that impact the business from a quality and cost standpoint. So many companies don't understand the connected tissue between operational excellence and innovation. And so many, I think I saw a quote from Bezos that 80% of all Amazon innovations have come from operational excellence, right? Constantly challenging the status quo and how do we go from world-class to better than world-class is where the inspiration for innovation comes from. And so I think that what's surprising to people is the constant pressure on metrics and operational excellence at Amazon.
And by the way, relentless.com is a reference to, was it the original domain name?
It was one of the original domains that Jeff registered, and it still works today. It resolves to Amazon.com, but it really is a message to the organization about we are relentless about getting to perfection.
What are some examples of how that manifests itself?
Well, it manifests itself in a couple of ways. First is you're always challenging yourself in how do I add additional metrics strict service level agreements, SLAs, and monitoring in place so that I have real-time understanding, maybe predictive understanding of what's going on in my operations. And secondly, I always talk about, you know, metrics is a verb at Amazon, right? It's about the action that you take based on the insights that you get from your metrics. And so the weekly rhythm of Amazon is a set of cascading metrics meetings where people get together to discuss and debate metrics, what's the root cause behind, you know, the issues there, and driving leaders to be accountable and understand the details of their business and bringing corrective measures forward.
So that is interesting because, as you said, I think a lot of people would say, oh, sure, Amazon, it's customer focused, it thinks long term. The old line is now it's willing to be misunderstood for long periods of time. But I do think people overlook the obsession with data. Is that a fair phrase to use?
Well, I think data is a tool, but the obsession is about getting it perfect and scaling, right? And you know, when you're delivering, whether it's the number of packages or the number of bits or the amount of content, whatever it is that Amazon is delivering today, trust is really built off of doing it perfectly 99.99% of the time. And that's what Amazon is after. You know, everybody likes to talk about the big innovation and, you know, the types of controversies that you can talk about. It's way under indexed what an operationally excellent organization Amazon is. And that is a big lesson that other leaders and other companies can take from Amazon. Is it comes from the hard work that you do every day in trying to get to perfection in things that matter to customers and to your operations.
Is there a downside to that? Are there things that you might, as a company or a leader, overlook if you're focusing on taking action on those metrics to optimize?
Yeah, which is the other side of kind of the story, which is the downside is if that is all you make time for, then you're not working in the future enough. And when you hear about Amazon being such a demanding place to work from a corporate standpoint, it's because leaders have to have command and control of their operations and their metrics and their operational excellence. And they have to be working in the future. And the tools they do use there are more in the narratives and future press releases and trying to envision and get to clarity, which is both simplicity and completeness of thought on what exactly are we trying to achieve with this next idea. And essentially then going around the shark tank and getting feedback on that idea and debating it on its merits. And so leaders have to do both. They have to work in the present and they have to work in the future. And the downside is, again, people don't spend enough time, leaders don't spend enough time working in the future.
Do you think people out there in everyday, ordinary businesses can take the principles, and not just the principles, but the ideas that you're talking about here, and apply them to their own businesses? Or is Amazon a unique place in that regard?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So I did leave Amazon late 2005. I've been advising clients really since then. Most of these ideas are ideas that I've worked with my clients. And so in no way would I recommend all 50 ideas, right? It's about finding the 3 to 5 that fit your needs, that you personally connect to, that you're willing to actually create a new habit around, and then fitting it to be you and everything is what I'd say. But the other thing I'd say is it really does come down to leadership, right? Making change, which is what this is all about. Making change is a leadership challenge first and foremost. And so leaders have to be willing to demonstrate new approaches, new ways of thinking, new questions to be asking and probing, and that's why it's a leadership challenge.
This gets to another of the ideas, and this is one of the ideas in your book that resonated most with me. And that was the idea that as a manager, you are, or a leader at the company, you are effectively a product manager. Can you describe this? Because this was extremely counterintuitive to what many people are taught when they become managers after being individual contributors.
Yeah, so that's idea 10 called You Are the Chief Product Officer, the New Management Science of Being a Builder. Yeah. And Amazon, and even in this shareholder letter, Jeff talks about Amazon as a culture of builders. And really what that means is that senior leaders at the right moments need to be able to either develop the code, understand the algorithm, or more, is write the narrative, the clear user experience or the exact feature to be able to cut through the bureaucracy and help speed along exactly what we are going to build or what we're going to accomplish here. And you would expect that senior leaders with all the insights they should have in the business, in their customer, in the industry, but so often they're just looking for their teams to, you know, build the PowerPoint and present to them the dumbed down, you know, version of whatever the idea is and everything. And that's the old model that exists in most organizations. And the new model is senior leaders need to be able to, with clarity, be able to specify this is what we are going to do with clarity and exactitude and speed the organization along.
And the other interesting part of this to me was it's not just about understanding the product, being a builder yourself. It's also about holding yourself accountable or making sure you're held accountable in the same way that your team is. So you're walking the walk and also being evaluated in the same way.
Well, if you are going to be able to, you know, specify exactly how something is going to work, guess what? You need to be paying attention to details. You need to understand the customer. You need to have the metrics. You need to have those insights. And so it's kind of a forcing function that is a good litmus test of, are you doing all these underlying things? Because if you're not, then you're going to struggle in being able to say, well, this is exactly what the customer experience should be.
If you were a retailer, say a traditional retailer, looking to compete against Amazon, are there one or two ideas that you would study, if not to implement yourself, then at least to understand the nuance and the approach that Amazon takes in competing with you?
Yeah. So the one that I would focus on if I were a retailer in particular is idea 26, which is called, why is this so hard? Innovate by reducing friction. I think that as customers in so many industries, including retail, we've just gotten comfortably numb with the way that things work today. And if you really look at what the customer experience, like what a customer would desire, I think the Amazon Go store is a good manifestation of deeply understanding customer friction and setting aside all traditional approaches to it, because really all customers want is they want to be able to run in, grab the Clif Bar, walk out without ever being in a line or pulling out their wallet or anything else. And so, you know, the one that I think about is I had to go to a big box home improvement store. You know, the last weekend I had a very specific light bulb, little tiny nuanced light bulb that I needed, you know. Two challenges. First, even finding the aisle with lighting. And then secondly, you're faced in front of a board where there's 100 light bulbs and you're up there matching, you know, and I don't have great eyesight. I'm trying to match the exact light bulb that's there. Can't you imagine a scenario where either a smart speaker or some handheld device where you can either take a picture or voice, say, hey, show me exactly where this item is. And it tells you, oh yeah, you know, aisle 6, row B, bin C, that's customer friction, right? I think a statistic I heard a while ago, but I think it's still directionally true, is that 50% of all customers go into one of those big box retailers. The item that they're looking for is in the store and the customer walks out without finding it. Discovery is a massive challenge. It's a challenge for Amazon still, right? The only problem with being the everything store is that you're the everything store, right? Discovery is still a big challenge for retailers, and that's friction, and that's where I would start if I was a retailer.
And so some of them, like Home Depot, you can do that where you basically find out which aisle it is, but it's not necessarily a frictionless process.
I would. My guess is it's still probably a little clumsy.
It is. Having tried it myself, I can say that it is. I end up looking for one of the associates that's inevitably never there.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. And that actually gets back to what we were talking about at the beginning, and that is just the relentless push by Amazon. I mean, if they were running that business, they would know that that was a problem. They wouldn't just roll out the app that showed you where the item was. They would make sure that you were able to use the app to actually find it. And if you couldn't, that someone was there to help you.
And they would leverage all their different tools that they have, like Alexa and stuff like that, to help solve that problem.
Amazon, of course, has its share of critics out there. Are there downsides in the leadership principles and the 50 and a half ideas that you look at and say, this is part of what makes Amazon a target for criticism? Are there things here that...
Well, I think Amazon's a competitor. Isn't that the basis for capitalism, is being competitively better and everything? And so if the downside is that you're a great competitor, then I guess that's the downside. But it's tough for me to kind of not hear, you know, complaining and whining in that.
You're listening to GeekWire, and we will be right back with more of our conversation with John Rossman, author of the new book, Think Like Amazon.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
We are sitting here in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood at the GeekWire offices, and we're literally three blocks away from where Amazon will hold its shareholders meeting tomorrow. It's kind of this quirk of our location that we're able to kind of walk to the shareholders meeting. I've been going for many years to the shareholders meeting, and it really does tend to follow the annual letter that Jeff Bezos sends to Amazon shareholders. This year's annual letter had to strike a chord with you. It was about the business that you joined Amazon to build.
Yeah, the very opening piece was a list from 1999 to 2018 of the percentage of units that are third-party sold units. And it goes from 3% in 1999 to 58% in 2018. And I thought the number was right around 50%. Mm. If anything, I thought that the number might be going down a little bit as Amazon takes a little more control for inventory and availability, but according to this, it's 58%.
So when you look at that, is that a success or a failure? Because as we were saying at the very beginning, this might have been a message in part to the first party sales team.
Yeah. And so I think it's a combination of both, right? And internal competition is a real healthy thing. So I think part of it is a challenge to Amazon, the first party retailer, about like, hey, how do we do better? But it's also a celebration of success and competition on the marketplace platform that allows third party sellers, big and small, to be able to have access to, you know, Amazon customers, leverage all the great tools and fulfillment capability of FBA. And so I think it's both.
The third party marketplace business has also been a subject of criticism and potential antitrust action, depending on who gets elected in 2020. Senator Elizabeth Warren has said that the marketplace is an example when Amazon sells its own products competing with those third party sellers of potential unfair competition. Especially as the person who joined the company to build that third-party business, what do you think of that?
I'm not a anti-competitive expert, and I think especially when you're talking as an expert on something, you got to stick to your swim lane and everything. So I have no idea like what the basis for that is and everything, but I think it's a tremendous success, right, for Amazon and for sticking with it. What people don't remember is we launched Marketplace in 2002. It took a number of years of incubating those new categories, getting the selection that mattered, getting customer attention that you could come to Amazon for much more than books, music, video. And it was really the combination of adding in FBA, which is fulfillment by Amazon, and Amazon Prime. That triple combination of marketplace, FBA, and Prime is really what turbocharged the marketplace business. And so I think the lesson to take from this is what the story I'm always telling is, it takes patience at times, right? You always have to be testing your progress and your hypotheses and learning, but it typically takes patience to build something that really matters.
Just extemporaneously, I happened to bump into Tom Ahlberg mm-hmm. at a conference last week in Seattle. He has been on Amazon's board since close to the beginning. He was one of the first investors, and he is retiring from the board this week. But I wanted to play for you what he said, what Tom Allberg said when I asked him what the secrets to Amazon's success have been. Let me just play this for you now.
I was asked by a CEO of a big financial institution last year, you know, well, what's Amazon's secret? I said, well, there are no secrets. Everybody knows all these principles, but it is really difficult to live them. And I think the problem of banks as well as others is really living by those, you know, constant innovation, putting the customer first. I mean, people talk about these things, but very hard to really consistently live it. And Amazon and others do a good job of that.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think that's just the start of the story as far as what makes, you know, the secret of Amazon, right? Because when you're putting the customer first, when you're innovating and experimenting, what aren't you doing? Well, you're not prioritizing profitability, right? You're not prioritizing a number of other things. And it's that willingness to flop your priorities that is so hard for most leaders and most companies.
You talk toward the end of the book about the metric, the financial metric that Jeff Bezos uses to measure the company's success or failure. And it's not net sales. It's not the bottom line. It's not net income or profits. It's free cash flow.
Right.
Explain why that matters and how it's different in terms of assessing a business.
Well, I'm not a financial accounting expert, but free cash flow is essentially like the money that you have, the difference in cash that you have at the end of the year that you can then invest, right? And so it's a form of EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, and amortization. And so it is truly one of the best ways of getting non-tax implicated, non-financially managed numbers to understand the growth and the cash flow that you've generated from your business. And that's what you have in order to invest in the future. And if you look at really the game that Amazon is playing, is they're a very profitable company, but they have just continually taken that excess proceeds, that free cash flow, and invested it to A, scale the things that are working, and B, to be trying a number of new experiments as small as possible, but sometimes they're not small, as small as possible in order to build the next new big business.
We saw a few quarters over the past year when Amazon had some pretty sizable profits. And then last quarter, all of a sudden, they announced that they're going to be shifting from two-day Prime shipping, two-day free shipping as the core benefit of Prime, to one-day free shipping, and it's going to cost them $800 million in the current quarter alone. And we were joking around the office. It was like, clearly they looked and said, oh my gosh, we have too many profits here. This is a problem. Are we becoming a day two company? Is that what happened?
Well, I don't think they looked at it from that lens. I think they looked at it as far as, you know, what, you know, Amazon's always believed in durable customer needs, right? And I remember I went to a client once with Jeff, and he talked about durable customer needs and that he could never envision a world where a customer wanted higher prices. He could never envision a world where a customer wanted less selection, and he could never envision a world where a customer wanted slower delivery. And essentially, within retail, those are the swim lanes that Amazon has always been investing in, and they're going to continue to invest in things that are probably along those three durable needs. And so, I you know, they already have Prime now, which is in-day delivery in many cities. So I think, you know, they've been working on the supply chain infrastructure in order to do, you know, next day delivery for all Prime customers. And I thought the other real interesting supply chain feature that they announced a couple of days ago was, as a customer, your ability to specify which day you wanted your delivery. So I'm gone for 3 days on this trip. I just ordered a book. I want it delivered on Thursday. I don't want it sitting at my front porch over the next 2 days. I can specify that it's delivered on Thursday. The mechanisms of the supply chain that it takes to be able to provide on an order level the control to say this customer wants this item on this date, that's the type of nimble supply chain that I think is really hard for anybody else to follow up with.
We're speaking this week with John Rossman, the author of the new book, Think Like Amazon, 50 and a Half Ideas to Become a Digital Leader. John is a former Amazon executive himself, and when we come back, we'll get his take on the surprising twist that the company's HQ2 search took. We spoke previously about your previous book, The Amazon Way, and one of the things that has changed, or one of the developments that has taken place since then, is HQ2, this process that really captured the attention of the world in a lot of ways because it was so big and potentially rewarding for a city that might have landed the entire thing and kind of a spectacle. How did you see Amazon's characteristics play out through that process? And did you see Amazon being true to its principles and these ideas that you're talking about in your book? Or was there something in there that surprised you?
Yeah, so the principle that I really saw shining through there is really thinking long term and asking yourself the question, what are the biggest risks or constraints that I have in my business? I think Amazon did that exercise of what are the biggest constraints? And it's about getting more world-class technologists into the Pacific Northwest, right? It's hard to recruit here, right? Housing prices, it's already so busy and it's not a place for everybody. And so I think what Amazon did was that exercise, and they said, oh, we need another major headquarters environment. It would help diversify the business. And because they dealt with it early versus kicking the can down the road, they were able to take advantage of it, meaning they were able to do it to their benefit versus having to be late in it and paying the penalties that you pay when you kick the can down the road on your business risks. So the lesson to take is think about what the biggest risks in your business are and don't pass them on to future management. Deal with them today.
And obviously that was the recruiting motivation for the original request for proposals in the HQ2 search. What about the decision to pull out of Long Island City?
Yeah, I really wish I understood all the dynamics, both on Amazon's side, as well as I think it was primarily a messy, you know, New York political situation. But again, I think it's Amazon. Like what we decided, even if it was a couple weeks ago, has no bearing on what the right thing to do is today and going forward. And they said, well, this is what's happening. Doesn't matter that we put all this time into it. Doesn't matter that we've made this commitment. It's not too late for us to change your mind. And we think we've learned some things. And so now is the right time for us to change your mind. So they took, again, they took the bad medicine and they didn't just kick the can down the road and go forward with something that they didn't believe in.
The first chapter, the first idea in the book is in fact called Reset Your Clocks. And the HQ2 example is the one that you cite because they are thinking, okay, what are we going to need in terms of our headquarters, our talent pool? Decades down the road.
Decades, literally decades down the road. And I also, I get asked a lot of questions about healthcare and Amazon and everything, right? And again, I think of that in terms of decades of impact and a multi-pronged strategy that they're going to have. But I think it'll be great when I'm an old guy and we're here together talking about how Amazon transformed the healthcare industry the way that they've changed retail, because, you know, it's 18% of GDP. And I don't think any employer or any parent or any patient would say, I'm really thrilled with the way it works today or the cost basis for it.
And you cite in one of the chapters about this PillPack and the acquisition of the company that essentially sends specific doses to you in small packages in the mail. It actually does in many ways follow the Amazon model where it looks at the pain points. And so when you think about that, you can see why Amazon bought them.
Yeah, that and it brings along 50 state pharmacy licenses along with it also. But it's obviously like an operationally innovative company, right? They use supply chain and operations as a way to innovate. So I think that aligns really well with how Amazon thinks about innovation.
What else do you think about and where do you see Amazon going with things like voice and devices? And there was just a report today that Jeff Bezos is very interested in cars and autonomous vehicles. Where is this headed? Like, is there anything that Amazon would not do?
I think there are a lot of things that Amazon wouldn't do. I think they like heavy transaction, technically complex, low service required types of businesses. But the most interesting things that I see in Amazon's future, I don't think are any big surprise or might not be the things that others would think are the big things. Like the announcement from Kohl's in accepting Amazon returns later this summer, they buried the headline in that a customer doesn't have to bring it in a box, and they don't have to provide a shipping label or invoice. They can just drop off the item, and I could picture that they just show their Amazon app, they scan the receipt, and you just hand the item, right? Removing friction. I think that and leveraging other people's infrastructure to do that, I think that type of continuing to remove friction both for delivery and for returns are going to be constant things that you're seeing from Amazon. The Amazon delivery to trunk programs, yes. Right? They incubated that a couple of years ago in Germany. They're scaling that up now with Ford, Volvo, a number of other North American OEMs. I think that's just a brilliant concept and idea. And the future of great customer experiences is across multiple products and oftentimes across multiple companies. And so I think every leader needs to be thinking about how do I integrate on a real-time, operational, scalable, secure way to enable great customer experiences. Amazon delivery in garage, I think, is a real interesting, again, just an experiment. Over the next couple of years, you're not going to see many people doing that, but over the next 10 or 15 years, as homes get rebuilt, what a garage is going to get rethought. I think that's a real interesting small experiment that Amazon is building experience in and building tools and products for. And then, yes, the investments in autonomous trucking, autonomous cars, and interest in transportation, I think, is going to be a constant one for Amazon, both because of their own supply chain and delivery needs, but also as an important point of contact for customers, right? We spend a lot of time in our cars as customer, and it's a great opportunity for interface for Amazon and for Alexa.
When you look at the company over the past year, another big notable part of its story has been Jeff Bezos seems to be involved in a lot of things apart from Amazon, whether it's Blue Origin or battling the National Enquirer. And he certainly was very out of the box in the way he took on the National Enquirer as well. Do you think that Amazon, if Jeff Bezos were to move on, and obviously he will at some point, but do you think that they positioned themselves to continue these traditions, or is it dependent on him as the leader inside the company to maintain them?
Yeah, I think it's so far past Jeff at this point. I think he serves as a great ambassador and an exemplar for the organization, but in no way does he have to keep his finger on the pulse to make sure that these principles and mechanisms are aligned. He's got a great leadership team, and they've been so thoughtful about codifying and practicing and making these principles come to life every day for every employee and every meeting and everything you do. And so those habits are there. And that's the challenge for other companies and other leaders, is how do you build a couple of new habits to help, change the tone and tempo?
John Rossman is the author of Think Like Amazon, 50 and a Half Ideas to Become a Digital Leader. John, where can folks find you?
They can find the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other great retailers in hardback, in Kindle, in audio form. And you can find me on LinkedIn, or you can email me at john@rossmanpartners.com.
John, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to GeekWire. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in your favorite podcast app, and be sure to leave us a rating and a review. We will have full coverage of Amazon's shareholders meeting this week in Seattle if you want to check out geekwire.com to catch up on all the news from inside the meeting with Jeff Bezos and the company's shareholders. We'll be back later this week with our weekly news roundup. Until then, I'm Todd Bishop. Thanks for listening, everybody.